My name is Scott Harvey, and I am performing a hostile takeover of the Murder Police Podcast.
Warning. The podcast you're about to listen to may contain graphic descriptions of violent assaults, murder, and adult language. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Murder Police Podcast, Episode 0. Who are Wendy and David? Part 1 of 2.
Well, welcome to the Murder Police Podcast. I am not David or Wendy Lyons. My name is Scott Harvey, and I am performing a hostile takeover of the Murder Police Podcast because I have been a listener since episode 1. David is a friend and a client of mine. A little background on me. I am a retired law enforcement officer and I retired as sergeant, ran our Citizens Police Academy, ran our community services division. Words are hard. But ran our community services division, and I retired in 2018 and took my speaking career, which was part-time while I worked at the police department, to a full-time basis and added coaching, added a podcast, added all the things. And David is a member of my mastermind. And we got to talking one day and I said, you know, David, I love the Murder Police Podcast, which I've listened to every episode, but like I know you and Wendy, but your listeners don't know you and Wendy. I said, you need to let them in on who you guys are. He said, you know what? That's weird, though, to kind of talk about yourselves on your podcast. I said, so we'll make it not weird. I will come and interview you guys, do a hostile takeover, and find out kind of what the listeners want to know that they just haven't asked. So honored to be here, David and Wendy. Excited to be in the Murder Police Podcast studios. Did not partake from the bourbon collection that's outside because I wanted to be able to enunciate appropriately, even though I messed up the office I work for. So welcome, David and Wendy, to your own podcast.
Thank you for having us, Scott.
Thank you very much for doing this. I'm super grateful. I've been excited ever since you offered it, because it did dawn on me that the only thing we did was like a little 60-second trailer, I think, in the beginning, and we've never slowed down to really talk about who we are. And yeah, the relationship is getting pretty strong with our listeners, and I think they'll find some of the things that we've done and we're into now are pretty interesting, and a lot of familiarity. They'll learn that we're just like they are.
Yeah, it's kind of funny the way it played out. I said, you need somebody to interview you all. And you said, let me know when you're ready. And I was like, don't tempt me, brother, because I will be there. I love talking to people. I love asking difficult questions. And so we're going to jump in. We've talked about this, David and Wendy. This is a successful podcast. I mean, you guys have got a good thing going. You know that. Your listeners know that. This isn't a surprise. But how did we end up here? How did we get to the Murder Police Podcast?
Wow. There were some discussions a couple of years ago with a few people that I knew, Jack Patty and Ray, the DA Larson, who we unfortunately lost just about a year ago, where we were all talking about maybe going into some kind of a show or concept. And there were a lot of ideas bounced around. And at the given time, for example, Jack remains a very good friend of mine, and he's still with VLK Radio. Is in his career right now, it probably wasn't a good time to jump and make a move yet. Although down the road, I think we'll hear from Jack. And Ray offered to help us get off the ground, which was good. But I remember when I was thinking of the concept and we were thinking of what the name would be. And one day I was mowing. And as you just pulled up, you know, here at the Murder Police Farm, is that we've got a handful of acres. And I was mowing and it kind of came over me that my wife, Wendy, is a true crime fiend. I don't want to say addict, but a true crime fiend. That is all that's on in the house. I think one of the things that I love about being retired is I don't get those text messages at 3:30 in the morning and her 42-question follow-up on a one-line sentence. But she really has she's just like our fan base. And I thought, my Lord, she's here in the house, and that she would represent the audience wonderfully. I asked her into it. I don't think she really understood maybe altogether what we were going to do with it, because maybe I didn't. That's where the concept came to. And I picked the Murder Police Podcast because in the police business, in a lot of places, if you're a homicide detector, you're the murder police, mm-hmm. just like a narcotics officer is a narc and whatever. So it's been an inside for a lot of cultures to be the murder police. I thought it had a good ring to it, came up with some licensed artwork and did a little work with that. And we did a trailer and started recording episodes. And we're pinching ourselves. We've talked in the mastermind before. This is a hobby. We're sitting down here in the basement in a room that we kind of converted for this. it's moving along quite well. I'm just astounded at the growth that we've had and continue to have. The last I checked, according to Listen Notes, we're in the top 1% of over 2.8 million podcasts worldwide. That's a pretty good place to be.
Yeah, it is.
And I think when you asked about how we got there, I think a lot of it is consistency and faith. It's just going, going, going. And everything you'll read about doing a podcast is where most struggle is if they get disappointed or forget or just don't keep going. Consistency, I think, is what sells. And then we have a fantastic audience. I can't say enough about it because their inquisitiveness is amazing. And everything I've seen, they've got giant hearts. So from my perspective, that's how we're here. That's how Wendy became so much a fundamental piece of this, because being a listener and being a fan of this kind of genre is what the listeners get, is that she will ask those questions literally that they're thinking. So if me and some of the other police get technical or go in a different direction, she'll reel us in. Just like if you and I had a conversation about what we did, we'll pass people up sometimes just with acronyms and slang and things like that, and she reels us in.
So Wendy, as a true crime fiend, as he says, I don't know if that's how you describe yourself or not, but is this like dream come true for you? Is this a different side of the coin? How does this work with your love of true crime stuff?
Well, I think true crime fiend does describe me well. It is always on the television. And I have, I have my select shows that I really like to watch. I'm not a CSI. That stuff's not real for those of you who are into it. But there are real true crime shows that I just love and I love to read also. So I don't know that I'm pinching myself per se. A lot of these cases that we talk about are cases that, I've heard David talk about over the years. And so I've known the basis of them and they're just really interesting. And of all the ones we have, I always say Haley McCohen is my favorite. You know, it's if you've not listened, listeners, please do. It's a tragic story of a murder of a 13-year-old little girl by a serial killer. But there's a book about the serial killer as well. And so I guess I like to take things in different avenues. I like to know about the case. Then I like to read up or study on who the murderer was. So for me, it's just doing something that I enjoy doing. It's not a labor of love. It's not tough. It's just a very much, somebody wants to talk true crime, I talk it. And what better place to talk it than with shows that I know about, or maybe some of them I don't know about. And a lot of times that's where the questions are generated. Some of the shows I haven't heard of, or David's asked people in Chattanooga on a case we did before of a 14-year-old girl that was murdered. So I love details. David always says that you're so detail-oriented, and I just want to know all the details and why and when and then what happened. And so I just take my natural who I am and apply that, and just subsequently ends up being that other people want to know those same details, mostly women.
Nice.
True.
Hey, Murder Police Podcast fans. The Murder Police Podcast now has its own merch and swag store. Go to themurderpolicepodcast.com and click the Murder Police merch store button now.
One of the things I appreciate about the Murder Police Podcast, unlike you, Wendy, I don't do the police shows. I don't watch police movies because they aggravate me as a retired police officer, because most of that crap's just not true. It pulls me out of the reality of the movie. It pulls me out of it because it's just not real. But I like the Murder Police because it doesn't glorify the perpetrators. It raises up the victims. It gives them a voice. It tells their story, which we know is the only way they still survive. The families say, I have permission to share Burke Rhodes' story when I do presentations. I've gotten permission from his wife. And she said, Scott, that's the only way he survives. Please tell his story. And the Murder Police isn't glorifying violence or anything. It's just honoring those that have been left behind. And I appreciate that about this show. David, we're talking about how we got into this podcast, but when did you get into policing? Give people some history kind of about how you started in this job.
I actually started with the Lexington Police Department in 1992, so it's been some time ago. But I can tell you that I was interested in law enforcement maybe since I was 6 years old. And people will look at that and doubt, but if you really get police to talk to you, they knew at an early age, usually there was a calling. And for us that really believe in what this job is about, it's a vocation. I knew I've always wanted to do that. I tried some things outside policing before, and just I worked on an ambulance as an EMT in Louisville for a few years, which was a great experience. It got me ready for this, but the itch never left. And so finally in 92, as I applied and was fortunate enough to get hired with the Lexington Police Department, which is one of the most progressive professional PDs that I've been around. And I can say that without bias, even though I was there. So I spent my career there and had been blessed with a lot of really neat assignments to move around. As people might have heard before, by the time I retired 2 years ago, I was working the last 5 years at the appointed rank of commander. I think in one of the pre-interview things, you were talking about how that's not a lot of heavy lifting, and it's not. And we could argue that by the time you get into the command level, you're practically not the police anymore.
Right.
So there's a part that you love your role as a leader, but it's not the same. And of all those experiences, I think what stood out was the time I spent in the homicide unit, because we had a real team. All of the team dynamics that you hear about, read about, and try to learn, we lived. And nothing ever compared to that. I always tell people that over on the wall, I've got a significant collection of badges in a shadow box. The one that meant the most was the one I only have one copy of that said detective. Mm. That was a passion. I had to eventually move out of that because of family issues and things that I knew that I was about to occupy too much time. If I stayed in there raising my daughter, because it demands so much of you, mm-hmm. it is not a 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, if anybody goes into that business and thinks it's a 9-to-5, they need to leave. Mm-hmm. It's going to take more of it. That's my career path on there. And I think that's what spoke to me this. And thanks for recognizing what we do with victims, because I've always been big on victim advocacy. The people I worked with were that. In this show, we do like the idea that we're memorializing some people. Mm-hmm. Google and the internet is relatively new in history. I can give you an example that there's some of the cases we've covered that before we covered them, if you Googled the victim's name, you might find a copy of an appellate decision based on the defendant. But there's nothing about who these people are. And one of the things we respectfully do, and I think lovingly do, like you said, is we launch them into the immortality of the internet. Because mm-hmm. once we have them indexed on there, it'll open doors for people to learn more about these. And we've had so many family members reach out and say the same thing you did with Burke's family. Mm-hmm. That means a lot. That's why we're going to start. This is airing in August of 2022. And one of the things in this remake after this vacation we took is you're going to hear a lot more unsolves and missings to really get these word out on people.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's important too. You loved the murder police aspect of your job, being the homicide detective and everything, but you left that for family reasons. I don't think you would be where you are today had you stayed in as a murder police detective, because it's just so wearing on you psychologically.
I think it is.
You know, I think it's a good job for a season. I don't think it's a good job for a career personally.
And people do it. It was kind of hard to leave in some ways, but I will say that you do go through a lot. And now in retirement, you unpack that stuff slowly. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that's one of the reasons why, like on our website, you're not going to find pictures of deceased people and mm-hmm. things. That's not how we want to remember these people. And quite frankly, some of the shows that are out there are overly gratuitous with that. Mm-hmm. That's a little disturbing, but that's their bailiwick if they want to go that way. But these people meant more than just being a blip on a uniform crime report every year.
Right.
They deserve to be more than that. And our families deserve to have a place where people can learn about who they are to the best. And it's tough. Going back and getting a personal history on somebody from 20, 30 years ago is almost impossible. Mm-hmm. But we give it the best shot we can.
Yeah. Nice. So, Wendy, that's some of David's history. When did you enter the picture of David? When did you come in to kind of thankfully, thank God, smooth out some of these rough edges and make him the man that he is today?
David and I met, oh gosh, don't make me tell a year, 9 years ago. We got married 4 years ago. Bless his heart, it took 5 years to ask me to marry him. I think he was just pinching himself that whole time at this gem that he had stumbled upon. And so finally, he asked me to marry him, and we did. We got married February 10th. Do you remember the year, David?
I do now, yeah.
Do you want to tell it? It's 2018.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Way to make her say it so that you could confirm it, David.
Oh, yes.
Well played.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it took him forever to remember our anniversary for a while, but we met, and it was kind of ironic the way we met. You know, I had attended Lexington Police Department's Police Academy in 2005, and I went through that, and there was a lady that she and I were very good friends. And after I left, after the academy, she and I remained friends, and we would hang out a lot. And I guess, David, maybe you were her sergeant at the time. I don't know how you and she knew each other. Maybe you just knew her, but he and she were friends on Facebook, and he would often comment on our pictures of, you know, she and I at dinner or things that we were out doing. And you know how it does, it suggests someone as your friend. And I don't know who friend requested who first, but we became friends on there. And I had unfortunately lost my dad, and David was sending messages, or actually he wasn't sending messages at that time. He was commenting, sorry for your loss. I've been there. I know how hard that is. And one day he messaged me, or I messaged him. I was thanking him for reaching out because it was a very tough time for me when I lost him. He said that he had a dream that we had gone to dinner at a Mexican restaurant and that I was ordering the food in Spanish. And I said, well, actually, I do speak Spanish. And so I said, well, maybe we should go to a Mexican dinner sometime. And he, you know, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do that. But only he didn't ask. Like, that was in December. And finally, I don't know if I kept begging enough, or maybe he was just tired of the messages or was bored. I don't know. But we ended up going out in April to that dinner. And that's how it all began. And you know, I knew that he was with Lexington Police, obviously, because of my friend. But he was a sergeant. No, I'm sorry. He was a lieutenant at that time. And then we were together when he got appointed commander. But I've been there for the last 9 years through his career. And it's something that we both enjoy. We both are law enforcement enthusiasts and supporters. And so I think that kind of made it a good match.
A very true story. The dream was one of those clear dreams. And I called it Spanglish at the time.
Right.
That we were eating at the restaurant. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, every now and then you have that type of dream mm-hmm. that is just different. You know, I had some with some of the casework, and maybe one time during a show we'll talk about what that is, and people will probably think, well, he's nuts. But mm-hmm. it was one of those dreams that was about as real and technical.
Well, and maybe I should add that our first date, we actually went to a Mexican restaurant called Mi Pequeña Hacienda, and he got there first. He's very punctual, and I'm not. I have time management issues that I don't care about correcting. It's just too light in life to even fix that. But he was there, and I walked in, and we had just ordered the drinks, and the chips came, and we had ordered the food. The food had just literally just gotten set on the table. And David said, oh, I have to go get my daughter. I've got to go. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is one of those ploys, because I had been single for a while and I'd been dating, and I would tell my best friend, Angela, who we also have done a podcast on that I unfortunately lost this year due to murder. I told her, when, you know, how people do when you're dating, hey, if I send you a message, text me and say, I need to come get my son, or text me and say, I've got to come pick you up. You're out of gas. So when the food arrived and David said, I got to go, I thought, I wonder who's texting him to get him out of this date. And I really didn't think I'd see him again, but he promised that we would go out again, and he really did call a couple of days later, and we did again.
It was a genuine speed date, because I remember, and honestly, my daughter, Brooke, mm-hmm. the floor mat you saw as we walked in got mm-hmm. me that for Father's Day, and that's on social media if people want to see it. I was single dad with her since she was 8, so she was in Lafayette High School band at the time. Mm-hmm. When they got back from a trip or got done with practice, you know how it is, because you have daughters, is you go. So I just remember looking at Wendy and she's putting food in a to-go box as I'm leaving. It was kind of funny.
Because you can't leave them sitting there on the curb like the Island of Misfit Toys, you know, where the last kid picked up, nobody cares. You know, we walk out of volleyball practice. I coach volleyball. And if there's kids sitting out there, I'm like, it's the Island of Unloved Kids.
Yeah.
You know, do you have somebody coming for you? They're like, they're on their way. So, yeah, you don't want to be that parent.
No,
so,
and we know as parents, when our children get older, because Brooke is 24 and married to a fantastic young man named Keaton. I love him to death, too. But when you look back, you miss that You missed that whole hustle, that whole thing. I mean, that's the whole reason I had a minivan, which would get me laughed at work so many times. It wasn't funny.
You probably shouldn't tell that.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't. I finally, when we got the farm and she was older, I finally got a pickup truck because,
thank God.
Yeah, because at the lumber yard in Lancaster, Kentucky, those guys would cry with laughter when I would pull in to get 16-foot fence boards. And
right.
I probably never should have tried that anyway, but
right.
I digress.
So, Wendy, what's the best part about being a police wife? Because I think that's something that people always wonder. They hear about police wives. They kind of think they know what it is. But what's the best part in your experience of being a police wife?
I think for myself, just watching David's love of law enforcement in general, and people that I speak to or had spoken to in the past always say what a great guy and great leader David was when they worked under him or worked with him. How fair he was. And he was so very well respected with Lexington Police Department. And other places we have gone, other agencies that are familiar with him, they say the same thing. I think for myself, just David's love of helping others, you know, obviously as a police, as you know, Scott, it's not all dewdrops on rose petals. Sometimes the jobs are very ugly and you're arresting people and it's fighting blood, sweat, and tears. But I think because I always have had an interest in law enforcement, and obviously David did as well, there was that part of us that connected. Like we could share stories, and because I didn't spend but barely not even quite a year there, there was so much I didn't know but wanted to know. I wanted to go into crimes against children had I stayed when it was time to be eligible to go into a detective bureau. And so I would ask questions about what it was like in that department, or how would you handle this? And so I always had that interest there. So I think marrying David, it was kind of like filling that little void that I had, or when I watched those shows, wondering the inquisitiveness of that job and how people handle it. And he did, and he did it with grace.
And I'm sure you've gotten used to having your back to the crowd at the restaurant, because most police officers have to sit against the wall, facing the room, all of that stuff. Do you notice, Wendy, when he notices stuff? Like when his radar goes off, I mean, do you see a change in him?
I do. And I have to tell a funny story, because when in the academy, you know, they tell you when you go in, sit, observe the room, observe the exits, sit with your back. So when we first got together, it was kind of like I wanted to sit against the wall and he wanted to sit against the wall. And I thought, well, he did do it longer than me, and he's a good bit older than me. So
and
maybe,
he has the gun.
And he has, well, I've got one too, but he always has his. But I was like, well, maybe I should just kind of, I'll let him think that I'm submissive in that area, but that's the only one.
Right.
So he does. And I will tell you, I'm always amazed. There's two stories I'm going to tell about David, and I'm going to toot your horn, David. So one of them, I was watching a show. He had been outside and he came in, and I'm watching this interview. I don't know if it was First 48 or what it was, but something I was watching, and they were interviewing a lady, and she was part of a suspect in a murder. And he comes in, he's getting himself something to drink, and he's kind of glancing at the television and going back and fixing the drink. And a couple seconds later, he looks over and he says, "She a prostitute?" And I looked at him and I said, "Oh my God, how did you know? Have you seen this episode?" And he's like, "No, I just knew." And I said, "How did you know? You've had to have seen this." And he said, "No, I've not seen it." And he said, "I just know the way she's answering, her mannerisms, and she wasn't doing anything, and she wasn't dressed in any sort of way that I would have thought she was a prostitute." But he said, "It's just her mannerisms and the answers that she's giving." And I thought, wow, he really does know this stuff. So I was really amazed by that. And then I will tell you, we often love to go, any of our locals here, or any of our not locals that want to look it up, Shaker Village in Harrodsburg, Kentucky is a favorite place for us. We will often go there maybe once every couple of months, stay all night. In the summer, they have bands out there, delightful food. It's just a beautiful little spot, very quaint. And we went about 2 months ago, and we were sitting outside listening to a band, sipping some wine. And David says, "The girl over there to our 11 o'clock, She's really on something." And I said, "Why?" So I look at 11 o'clock and trying to be not obvious. And sure enough, she's rubbing her nose. She keeps doing this thing with her hands, keeps flipping her arms around. Then she'd sit still. Then she'd rub her face and do her arms and sit still. And he said, now that guy, he's probably on this. He's not moving as much. He said, but she's really feeling it. And as we sat and watched, sure enough, he was right. And she just kept doing it and kept doing it. And it was so obvious after he pointed it out. So he's very observant. I will say that. And I'm often amazed at the things that he notices, or he'll say, you know, we've got to get out of here. This is kind of going to get a little bit ugly over here. We've got to go. And so, yeah, I don't know if it's the love of the job, the experience in the job, or maybe just David's age. Is that bad?
No.
I think they say with age comes wisdom. Honey, maybe that's why you're so smart.
We hope. But, yeah. You know, Scott, that's what the career does to you. And it's not a bad thing, but you do become pretty much an expert on human behavior to that degree. And I don't think people appreciate that until they're around it.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't go away. And it's not like ultra paranoia, and it's not hypervigilance, but it's the idea that you and I can go somewhere and probably watch something for a few seconds and take our wives and say, hey, let's pay the check and go. Mm-hmm. And we know that whatever's going on there, we just know we just don't want to be around ground zero.
Right. Early in our marriage, my wife would ask immediately, like, what's going on? Because she would see the change in my countenance. I saw something when we were sitting in the restaurant or we were out and about, and she would see, then she would ask immediately. You know, we're 25 years in now. She might, on the way home, she's like, did you see something weird in the restaurant? Because I picked up on something, and she's always right. But we were in New York several years ago in a subway station, and I'm sitting on a bench while my wife and her parents, because they went with us, are looking at the subway map. And I'm just sitting on a bench watching people. And this guy goes over to help them find where they're trying to get to on the subway. And he gets really close to her and her purse. So I'm just watching this guy. And he didn't do anything. He helped them find where they were going to. And then he left. And my wife told me on the subway, she goes, I saw you watching that guy. He was super nice. I said, that guy, before he came to talk to you, jimmied a piece of metal up the payphone to clear change out of the coin receptacle in the bottom. I said, so he's going to steal change from a payphone. He's going to steal from your purse if he can. So that's why I was watching that guy. Like, he was super nice. No, of course he was, because you look like an easy mark, the obvious out-of-towners in the New York City subway station. So we notice those things, Wendy, and we appreciate you all humoring us and asking when it's appropriate, all that stuff. What did they not prepare you for being a police wife, Wendy? Anything that caught you by surprise, maybe?
Hey, you know there's more to the story, so go download the next episode like the true crime fan that you are.
The Murder Police Podcast is hosted by Wendy and David Lyons and was created to honor the lives of crime victims, so their names are never forgotten. It is produced, recorded, and edited by David Lyons. The Murder Police Podcast can be found on your favorite Apple or Android podcast platform, as well as at murderpolicepodcast.com, where you will find show notes, transcripts, information about our presenters, and a link to the official Murder Police Podcast merch store, where you can purchase a huge variety of Murder Police Podcast swag. We are also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, which is closed caption for those that are hearing impaired. Just search for the Murder Police Podcast and you will find us. If you have enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe for more and give us 5 stars and a written review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your podcasts. Make sure you set your player to automatically download new episodes so you get the new ones as soon as they drop. And please tell your friends. Lock it down, Judy.